Talk radio is a direct line of communication between you and the newsmakers and newsbreakers of today. Talk to the people who are involved in current events and headline issues. Talk radio is your invitation to a learning experience. Talk radio is
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to a Saturday night. For the next 3 hours, it's you and me and this wonderful world we call Open Mind. And we're here to stretch yours just a little bit. Why do we do Open Mind? Well, we have found out that everybody has a reality box. This reality box is shaped by your religions, your formal education, your living experiences. All of those things that say to you that this is reality, and anything that you hear outside of that reality box, you immediately decide that the person is lying to you, they're crazy, need to be locked up or something. And even if it's your own perception of your own senses, you will decide that you are hallucinating or that you're going over the deep end. Well, it is this reality box through which we view this thing called reality. It's our window to reality. And over the last 5 years or so, we have found out that most people are viewing reality through a peephole, not a window. And what we're trying to do here is to expand your reality box a little bit. And one of the realities that we deal with here that may be troublesome for you, but I want you to listen to the information that we will give you tonight. We'll just put it on the table and you can take it or leave it, is this broad field that we call the Open Mind Show, the reality of the extraterrestrial. Now, you may not think that there is such a thing, but I'll tell you right now that if that's where you're thinking, that there are no such things as extraterrestrials or alien beings, or E.T., if you want to call it that, that you're in the minority. Most people in the world believe that there is such a thing. Most people in the world understand that this is not the center of creation, and that God did not work all of his wonders of human life on Earth and Earth alone. That's rather egotistic of us. There is the alien being. He's around us all the time. And we have a gentleman to talk about that tonight and other things of science that I think you will find quite fascinating and interesting. And it's his encore appearance. He was with us before, Mr. Edwin Slade, who is the chairman of the board of the Laser Arms Corporation of Las Vegas. This is the company that makes those marvelously accurate laser sightings for our military aircraft. Our SWAT teams use his little devices. Edwin has been very involved in government service and work. The military and what the military knows and is not telling you, what the government is not telling you about, and has had a fascination with the way we are not learning all there is to learn about the UFO. Did I say it right, Ed?
Well, you're trying to, Bill, and it's the kind of subject that you really can't get it all right first time.
Okay, so I screwed up. Straighten me out a little bit there.
Well, let's talk about science as applied to UFOs and some other fascinating subjects. The word science means, in the original Latin, to know. And to be a scientist, you have to know your subject and know your field. And I'd like to maintain the position that in the fields of UFOs, there aren't very many scientists because no one knows how they work, how to build one, where they come from, and what they're going to do next.
But the field of science, would you say, for the most part, knows that they are there and that they have been around?
Well, as we discussed in our last broadcast, there's a game being played, and by now, this game has gone into a full-scale folly ado that's becoming more and more difficult to support. As we quoted from our literature, in the 50s, in the early 50s, the United States military and the United States government took a position of direct honesty with the public. And Douglas MacArthur and Omar Bradley made public pronouncements on the reality of UFOs. After all, they were flying over the Capitol and they were flying over Washington, D.C. They were seen by millions of people. And there was a head-on appraisal of extraterrestrial visitations that were, shall we say, candidly presented by the military.
I think General Marshall was another one of those.
Yes, and what happened was there was a policy decision, and that could be determined by looking at the press releases that occurred sometime in 1952 that changed all that. Generals were dismissed. General Chaffee and General MacArthur was demoted in the public eye.
MacArthur said our next battle is in space.
Yes, I read you that quotation last time. But these generals passed from the scene, and there's been a consistent policy since about 1952 to either downgrade any UFO information or not discuss it at all. And I'd like to point out that that has caused a major disservice to the scientific community. The fact that UFOs are not discussed in any of the more prestigious, learned scientific journals has harmed the study of UFOs. And, of course, that effect is the effect that's desired by the controlling high priests of society today.
Who are they?
Well, I think there's a great prize to be won here, and the prize is to understand the questions concerning UFOs. Certainly, the biggest prize is how do they work and how can mere earthlings build them? And to build them would extend scientific, military, and political power immensely over the globe. And I think that secret is being sought after by all of the world's nations.
It would be a technological leg up for any country to be able to unlock the secret of the propulsion system, the weapon system, the navigational systems of the UFO.
Certainly, and I think that's the prize. And around 1952, the decision was made not only in the United States, but in the other major countries of the world to publicly play down the importance of UFOs, at the same time set up intense data collection and intense research on the subject in every country. And I think by now that's becoming obvious. That there's no secret that every country is vitally involved with the technology of UFOs, and at the same time downgrading it so that other countries would not guess that they're involved in attacking the secret.
I think it's very interesting that here in the United States, of course, the official government position is one to downgrade it and put it down. But one of our close allies, Britain, has a different regard for the UFO.
Well, yes, as you know, I was invited to speak before the House of Lords Study Committee on UFOs, which is still active and continuing, and that's been now for close to, about 5 years, this committee has been in session. And each month they invite a different speaker from all parts of the globe to give their views to Parliament on UFOs. And they've collected many presentations, which I'm happy to say are in the process of being published. One of the speakers has decided to collect all the pre-existing speeches and put them in one volume, and that effort is going on now. And I just had correspondence that as soon as they get mine, which was one of the first speeches, they will have a complete set for publication.
Well, I think it's interesting to hear the House of Lords of the British Parliament is carrying an ongoing investigation, open and above board, into UFOs, which our government says doesn't exist. We also are carrying on an investigation, but we're doing it in a very behind closed doors. Why is that?
Well, let's quote the government correctly. They don't say it doesn't exist. First, they said that these UFOs, whatever they are no threat to the present establishment. That's different from saying they don't exist. What they've tried to do is, weasel word it in such a way that no matter what happens, they'll try and come out right.
Mm-hmm.
But the intent is to downplay the importance of UFOs. And the language used is kind of neutral, with the excuse that we don't want to alarm anybody. Actually, this is no cause for alarm. It's cause for study, and it's cause for great contemplation as to the meaning and the impact of UFOs on modern life.
Do you know, or can you put your finger upon the rationale of the enormous bureaucratic bushy brains of both military and government who feel that it's best that the people of the American people don't know about this?
Well, I think we laid the groundwork for that. First, the UFOs contain powers that we don't know or possess. So we're really impotent in the face of a UFO demonstration of power. So the military is in a very difficult position. If they admit to it, then they really can't do anything about it. And it puts them in a very inferior position with regard to the public. So the best way to do it is to just ignore it or to downgrade it. At the same time, they're searching for the technology to improve their own forces to create the equivalent of a UFO. And what I would like to do tonight is discuss some of the details of the UFO and why it transcends technology that we know. And one of the most interesting areas for scientists to examine is to take your average man in the street observation of a UFO sighting and examine it for high technology. And I'd just like to point out a few things that seem to make, interesting thinking, because this high technology has not been solved at present on the Earth. And whenever you have a common average man in the street reporting on a very high technology principle, then you have something that he probably couldn't conceive of himself in imagination unless he actually saw it. And that's what's so interesting about these observations. So without going into names and places, after you've read enough observations that have been published, there's a certain thread of high technology that goes through it. And I'd like to just point out some of these threads.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
One of them is the opening or the doorway to a UFO. As you know, there's been many contacts of the third kind where humans have been invited or taken into a UFO craft. And they have observed, almost uniformly observed, that when the hatch closes, the seam of the hatch disappears totally.
Liquid metal.
It's like a cold welding or an electronic welding that takes place, and the hatch just vanishes and you have a smooth metallic wall when you close the door. Now, that kind of observation is so curious because we cannot do that.
Uh-huh.
And witnesses have said that they've taken a fingernail and scratched over the place where the door seam should be, and there is no door seam. Now, when you think about this, it becomes very interesting because for those scientists in the L.A. area who've been working on seals for doors on spaceships, they know the problem. The problem is that if you put a gasket in a conventional door, your best gasket in your best tight-fitting door, and then solve the equations for leakage, you find out that the gas contents of the cabin leak through the best seal in about a year, and you're out of atmosphere within the cabin. So if you want to go on a long space mission, you have to solve the simple problem of stopping leaks through openings in the cabin. And we have not got that technology to seal leaks, say, for more than a year. So the ideal way would be to cold weld the door. Of course, then you can't open it when you get to the other end. Well, the UFO seems to have solved just that basic problem, and I point it out because it's the kind of thing a man in the street wouldn't imagine. It's the kind of solution that had to be observed to be described. And I like that as a reinforced observation seen many times about specific UFO hatch technology.
All right, we're talking to Edwin Slade tonight. Edwin, very deeply involved in the science of the UFO. And that's what we want to talk about, and we want to talk to you about that. We've heard enough of UFO sighting stories. There are hundreds of thousands of them, and that's not what we're about tonight. So in forming your questions for Ed, and we want to let you get to him as soon as possible, think of it in those terms, because there are a lot of ramifications here that go far beyond just the curiosity of the sighting. That's been well established. That is, I think, data. That's here, whether you want to accept it or not. And get your questions going in that way, would you? Let me give you the telephone number so that you can talk to our guest, Edwin Slade, tonight. Bill Jenkins, it's Open Mind, and with me is Edwin Slade. Edwin is the chairman of the board of Laser Arms Corporation of Las Vegas. Very involved in a lot of very important things. And Edwin, for many years, has made the science of the UFO a pet subject of his. He speaks before the House of Lords of the British Parliament. Knows his way around this particular thing, in and out of government. I guess that you know what it's like to be at the Pentagon and with our friends there who don't like to talk about this subject too much. But we like to talk about it, and we want to talk to you. I've given you the numbers. I'll give them to you again. They're kind of lining up. Is there anything else that you'd like to make a point before we get to the science of the UFO tonight with the audience? I know you love to talk to them out there. You don't like to talk to me.
Well, yes, there's a vast subject here. And I think I once intimated that if you discuss UFOs, you inevitably go through the following logical network. If you think that UFOs exist, you wonder where they come from. And you wonder about their civilization. You wonder if they're responsible for either starting our civilization or monitoring our civilization. The next fear is, are they capable of destroying our civilization? These questions come very kind of staccato-like, and the subject just branches out, and it really encompasses all of the modern field of political science, and it becomes a very, very hard subject to limit.
Also, on the other hand, you were talking about we're afraid they'll destroy our civilization. There's a lot of people that are looking to the UFO as the salvation for our civilization. That for some reason or another, they'll come down here and mess with the squirrels and save us from doing ourselves in. We don't see any evidence that there's going to be that kind of interference in what we do on this planet, do we?
Well, I think the characteristic of the sightings to date is that the UFOs that have been observed and published reports indicate that they sort of are a benign influence at the moment. They come in a reconnoitering function. They gather data, they gather information. They don't fire unless they're fired upon. And in all those cases...
Are threatened in some fashion.
In all those cases where they've been fired on, they do a return fire, and they have caused injury and death, both to the civilian and military population, if they've been attacked. That's a thread that runs through UFO sightings. However, although UFO squadrons have been observed, probably the most famous is the Lubbock Lights.
Yeah.
There's been...
Many of them.
Many squadrons observed. The Mannheim Lights over Germany, and recently a squadron over Westchester County in New York.
The squadron over Los Angeles in 1942, January, is that?
Yes. Many photographs and witness the reports exist for squadrons. These squadrons have not attacked any terrestrial objects. They've kind of been in a reconnoitering mission up till now. So I would say that it's been a very confusing situation to have somebody with superior high technology watching us and us not having anything, well, having no power to do anything to stop it.
Well, particularly whenever we, of course, are the highest form of life form that exists in the universe.
Well,
I'm being a little bit sarcastic.
The universe is a pretty large place, and I think our statistical sample is kind of small, which is mainly around the environment of the Earth and its nearest satellite. But I think what we're trying to do tonight is make the audience reflect and think about UFO technology rather than try to condemn the whole concept out of hand without keeping an open mind as to what these sightings could mean.
Also, we have a lot of historical data about previous sightings that go back into antiquity.
Yes, and along that line, I happen to bring some information that I'd like to share with our audience about a very famous sighting that occurred in medieval times. And it's always nice to discuss medieval times because it's remote and harmless and doesn't upset the political environment of today. But I'm here to tell you that in the year 1561, there was a tremendous sighting over Nuremberg, Germany. And an artist who observed the sighting made 40 large woodcuts. And I mean, they're about 2 foot across and colored. They're nice. I saw the originals in a museum in Zurich, Switzerland, in the Wikiana collection.
That was a crash incident, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a crash incident. And these broadsheets are stored in a Wikiana collection in the Central Library of Zurich.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there for anyone's inspection, as I recall, and they're on the second floor. And what they portray is a sky full of UFO objects. I have a photocopy of the picture in front of me, and there are many globes flying in the sky, and some of them are flying crosses. Some of them look like flying cylinders with lights along the side. And in fact, of the half a dozen of different aerial objects that are in the sky in this broadsheet, each one of them has been correlated with a modern photo taken in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the correlations.
And the correlations have been published showing that every object in the sky in the picture of 1561 has been photographed recently in the sky of modern, on the modern planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that these things that have been portrayed still exist. Now, the reason I mention this this broadsheet, which was created by Hans Glaser in the year 1561, is that the one I have here shows the Church of Nuremberg in the background, and it shows a crash site of a UFO scout ship with smoke coming up from the crash. And it shows it in such a way that you could locate the site of the crash in relationship to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, among modern scientists, the conversation is, if this was a typical scout ship, it weighed about 30 tons, it crashed in the ground, it might still be there.
Has anybody looked for it?
No.
Why not?
Well, if they've looked for it, they haven't told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I proposed it to several international-oriented people, and they all kind of smiled. I think it's a worthy project to take this broadsheet and triangulate it from the drawings and find this crash. Along with the drawings was a long text that said that there were two pilots of this craft that were taken out alive after the crash, and they were your basic little green men,
mm-hmm.
3 foot tall, goblins or elves
mm-hmm.
in appearance, pointy ears and so on. And they were captured by the local populace and burnt at the stake. So there goes your first two specimens of extraterrestrial pilots burnt at the stake in the year 1561 in Nuremberg, Germany.
And people wonder why they just don't come down and land on our freeway and let everybody see them.
Well, I think that this is a sad commentary on how to deal with visitors from foreign places. I would propose that this is a worthy project to find this UFO. I think the chances that it's still somewhere in Nuremberg is very good. With metal detectors, you might be able to locate it.
Well, we have a lot of technology that we could use for that. One of the technologies we're going to use now is our telephone. And let you talk to Edwin Slate. I know there are quite an array of questions that are in front of me here. We'll handle those a while. We're going to be here till midnight talking about the UFO, the science of the UFO, more than anything else. You know, from all indications, our new KABC magazine, Let's Talk, is well on its way to becoming a real success. I hope you had a chance to read your issues. Naturally, all of us here at the station are delighted, excited about the fantastic number of subscriptions that are constantly coming in the mail from our Talk Radio cardholders. If you don't have a Talk Radio card but would like to subscribe to Let's Talk, it's not too late to do so. Just send $15, check or money order, not cash, to Let's Talk. Post Office Box 790, Los Angeles 90016. And include your name, address, and telephone number. We can o'clock, Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. I'm so glad you're with me, and I'm glad that Edwin Slade is with me. Ed is the chairman of the board of the Laser Arms Corporation of Las Vegas. Does a lot of important work for the government, for all of us, in fact, in that particular field. Laser research is something else. But Ed has quite a long history about checking into, becoming an expert on the science of the UFO. And we'd like to talk to you about that. And Alex is on the line. Alex, welcome aboard.
Good evening, Bill and Edwin. I am more or less a student of UFOs, at home anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very intrigued and frustrated by how the Air Force through the years has whitewashed and debunked a lot of the things that have been documented by very independent-minded people and not quacks.
I guess we can only say they didn't know anything else to do.
By the way, you know where the term UFO came from?
No.
Or rather, first person to use it, it was by a fellow who ran the Project Blue Book. I believe his name was Ruppelt. Maybe Edwin knows the name. Do you, Edwin?
Yes, that's correct. Ruppelt was the one who coined...
That's the one.
Unidentified flying objects.
He coined UFO. And the term flying saucer itself was...
That was Ken Arnold.
That was around June of 47, right?
That's right.
He sighted around 9 or 10 objects, and instead of going in a curvilinear line, like a parabola or a curve, they kind of oscillated. And he says that's like skipping stones on a water.
Yep, and he did see that over Mount Rainier.
Rainier in Washington.
Yeah, in 47, and coined the term.
What's your question for Edwin, Alex?
The question is, did UFO become very prominent with the death of the Captain Thomas Mantell of Air Force when he veered from one of the four F-51 pilots and chased one of them and ended up crashing that afternoon?
Well,
they were prominent before then. It was very much a part of what was going on.
When I say prominent, I mean that they started getting bureaus. But prior to Project Blue Book, they had Project Grudge and then Project Sight. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I've been out to visit Project Blue Book when it was at Wright Pat. And they had, almost 100,000 sightings on a Rolodex that you could refer to. And I remember going out there and asking to see the Mantell file, and I couldn't get it.
Right, because that's one of the very few fatalities of a military man.
Yes.
And that really started them questioning a lot of what's going on. But going on, the Secretary Kimball case also, a few years later, the Secretary of the Navy, was it Navy or Air Force, Dan Kimball?
Well, that's interesting you mentioned Dan Kimball because he was president of Aerojet when I worked for Aerojet.
What a coincidence.
And he was ex-Secretary of the Navy, and I didn't know him and meet him. And what is your question?
He was on a flight to Guam, and he was actually chasing, or the plane he was in was chasing a UFO.
Well, yes, there have been many such sightings. And what we're trying to do is, after decades of these sightings, to kind of summarize them and classify them to examine the technology involved. And that's what we're trying to do this evening.
What do you think happened to the keyhole story concerning the Utah pictures near Tremonton, where he had 40 foot of actual 16 millimeter film, gave it to the Air Force people? They were going to have a press conference, and then they decided not to. They were going to show these movies of actual UFO sightings to the press, and then they decided not to.
Well, I think the decision was made, as I say, around 52, to suppress the free interchange of UFO raw data. And I think that the reasons, as we discussed in our last show, had to do with the atom bomb secrets. When the atom bomb was discovered and invented in the U.S., the secrets leaked out to other nations, and we lost our technological superiority. And I think somewhere along the line, in the early 50s, somebody came to the conclusion that if there is a technical advantage to be learned from UFOs, we better not give the technology away by a free flow of interchange and ideas. And I think that's what happened. The blackout came in 52, and it's been a policy ever since. Now, also, we don't see squadrons of UFOs flying overhead that were man-made, so we have to assume that with 30 years of intensive study, the secret has not been publicly cracked.
Did Frank Edwards of Mutual try to give prominence and was censored in 54, 55?
Well, in those years, there were a lot of independent authors who tried to bring the story to the public from a sense of civic responsibility, but that was all vetoed by the military, and this was a really military decision. And yes, there was a lot of vetoing going on.
Is Donald Kehoe still alive?
No, he isn't.
Bill, before I go, the two books about black men, men in black suits.
The Men in Black.
The Men in Black, yes.
Men in Black. I'm trying to get the book, and I don't know who the publisher or author is.
Oh, you know, I don't have it on the tip of my tongue, Alex, but I'll try to find it for you.
And the other one would be Somebody Else's on the Moon.
Okay. Now, the other one is out of publication. George Leonard wrote it. It was published by McKay. McKay doesn't remember that they published the book, by the way, but it became a pretty good seller for pocketbooks in France and in Europe.
Well, we all have our stories of Men in Black, and I've got one, too.
Yeah, please tell it.
Well, I'd like to mention that when I was connected with the Intercontinental UFO Network, we had a very interesting project, and it was really spearheaded by Major Coleman von Kavitsky, who had worked previously in the United Nations as an employee in their photography section. He was familiar with many of the representatives, and over the years he had learned that over 100 countries had reported overflights of UFOs on their territory. And that was startling, so he decided to collect all the UFO photos and publish them in a book, and then recommend to the United Nations that they open a committee to study the UFO problem. And it was very well received by Sir Eric Gehry when he was the head of the United Nations. In fact, Gehry made a speech in 1977, I have it here, the October 7th speech, where he recommended that a study group be set up within the United Nations. Now, I'm here to tell you that with the documentation that the Intercontinental UFO Network supplied, the proposal was favorably received. And to show you how hard and how high up it went, the Security Council, for the first time in its existence, acted on a proposal from the public, namely from IQ Fund.
The National Security.
The Security Council of the United Nations said, yes, we will set up this study group. And if my memory serves me correctly, Mr. Neugebauer was the chairman from East Germany. This committee was set up. They had gotten to publish photos and reports from all over the world. We had original color photos of these objects, and it was quite exciting. We said, well, we finally made it to the UN. And it was very, very exciting. And then a few days later, there were some visitors from the United States government agency, unnamed, who sat down with all the people in the UN and said, forget this whole thing.
Hmm.
And it was forgotten. And there was no news coverage in New York. And there was one small article That it was canceled. I have it somewhere in my files.
The men in black came to the UN, then?
Well,
nothing is said.
I don't know what color they were wearing, and I don't know how many there were. But after a rousing reception where a committee chairman was named, the committee never did anything, and it was disbanded.
Oh, interesting. And, boy, that's almost conspiratorial.
Well, the sad part about it was that the world got very close to an open forum on UFOs until it was canceled in 1977.
How sad.
And, you know, it's like the death of it was unpublished, so nobody really knew what they missed.
Okay, Alex, going to let you go now.
You've got a very good guest there. Hopefully he can tell you about UFOs over the Capitol building also.
Oh, yeah, there were a bunch of those.
That was the 1952 flap.
Right, all right.
All right, Alex, thank you very much. We're 9 minutes away from 10 o'clock. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Edwin Slade. It's Open Mind. Tonight on Open Mind, Kirk, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
What's on your mind?
I want to know about Hangar 18, basically what's going on. Well, have you ever heard of Hangar 18?
Well, let's exclude the movie.
Yeah, okay.
Because the movie just used the term Hangar 18, and that was about as far as it got with anything factual.
Yeah, kind
of. But indeed, there was a Hangar 18. It did exist. It was a repository of UFO artifacts and the rest of it, and Mr. Slade wants to tell you more about it.
Okay.
Well, it's interesting. The hangar concept, I think, is a very exciting one. And I have with me an affidavit. And I'd like to just give you the elements of it. Back in 1953, a fellow named Fritz Werner wrote the following affidavit. I, Fritz Werner, do solemnly swear that during a special assignment with the U.S. Air Force on May 21st, 1953, I assisted in the investigation of a crashed, unknown object in the vicinity of Kingman, Arizona. The object was constructed of an unfamiliar metal which resembled aluminum. It had impacted 20 inches into the sand without any sign of structural damage. It was oval and about 30 feet in diameter, and an entranceway hatch had been vertically lowered and opened. It was about 3.5 feet high and 1.5 feet wide. I was able to talk briefly with someone on the team who did look inside only briefly. He saw two swivel seats, an oval cabin, and a lot of instruments and displays. A tent pitched near the object sheltered the dead remains of the only occupant of the craft. It was about 4 foot tall, dark brown complexion, and had two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, and a small round mouth. It was clothed in a silvery metallic suit and wore a skull cap of the same type of material. It wore no face covering or helmet. I certify that the above statement is true by affixing my signature to this document, and it's signed Fritz Werner. And this affidavit is really the origin of the Hangar 18 stories, because other witnesses said that trucks pulled up, took this craft away. Now, where it went to, there's a lot of tales of where it went to, but many people have said that it wound up in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with all the other remains of the occupants and vehicles. And I have publications that were issued just as late as a year or two ago, saying there are 60 remains of dead pilots of these ships that have been collected all over the world. They are at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I have a hangar number. It's not 18. And you could probably find the hangar just by trying them all. And the one that has...
The one they won't let you in.
The one that has 30 machine gun armed guards is the one. But
there is a story also, Kirk, and it has not been denied by Senator Goldwater, who was very much an Air Force buff and a great friend of the military, particularly the Air Force. And he had heard about Hangar 18 at Wright-Patt, wanted to go see it. And as a ranking member of the Senate, he figured he could. However, there was a five-star general who said he couldn't, Curtis LeMay. And Curtis LeMay literally stopped him from visiting the environs of Hangar 18. Curtis lives down in Newport Beach right now. He's an elderly gentleman, and his health is bad, but I wish that he would talk one of these days.
Are we getting anything out of it as far as research or any of that type of deal is concerned?
We hope so.
Well, the research is very privy to the group that's doing the research, and, you know, it's not generally disseminated. But I'd like to comment on the kinds of research and technology that comes from the study of UFOs. One in particular really centers on the anti-gravity feature of UFO propulsion. And it seems as though the UFOs have solved the problem of being unrestrained by gravity. The reason I say that is because so many sightings report that UFOs can hover indefinitely in a gravitational field without any major exhaust or energy expenditure. And I'd like to comment on that feature of high technology on this program.
Can you do it in a minute, or you want to wait till after the news? Because we're going to be taking just a little break here. Does that answer your questions, Kirk?
Yeah, very much so. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we do take a break, let's get Sam on the line and get him started about you want to know how they make these unusual maneuvers, Sam. Is that right?
That's right, sir.
And we were about to talk about that. So,
well, I would like him
close
to
your question.
I would like him to explain what his technical explanation for this high-speed 90-degree turn that I have seen.
You have seen them yourselves?
Yes, I have.
Well, the high technology of the UFO it really centers on the propulsion system. Number one, they hover indefinitely or at ease. Number two, they have extremely high acceleration. Number three, they can do a right angle turn that's been observed so many times.
Right.
And nothing terrestrial can operate this way.
Now, to complete that question, no human being could take the...
As we understand physics. Sam, do you want to hang on? You hear the music? The orchestra is here. That means we're going to take a break, go get a cup of coffee, let you listen to the news, but you stay on the phone, would you? Welcome back to Hour 2 of Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. Tonight we're talking about the science that surrounds the UFO and the alien being and other things, too. And we have quite a gentleman to talk to you about that. It's Mr. Edwin Slade, who's the chairman of the board of the Laser Arms Corporation of Las Vegas and deeply involved in the science of UFOs. The UFO itself, it is a part of our reality. It's not one of those things that make any difference whether you believe in them or not. One of these days, you'll find out. That's like saying, I don't believe that the sun rises in the east, in so many words. Ed, we were talking to Sam when we left. Sam wanted to know about the amazing maneuvering characteristics as have been observed by UFOs, and Sam said he had observed it himself. And so we'll pick it right up. Sam, are you with us? I'll push you back in, Sam. There you are.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Well, the right angle turn is one of the really perplexing observations of UFO missions. Now, that is really high technology because, as you point out, if there's an occupant aboard, then his gravity stress would be very large. Now,
it would destroy a human being.
Human beings have reported that they have been in UFOs while these turns were made and that there were no stress upon them when they were in the vehicle. So there's something very strange going on. And a lot of thought has been given to it without a firm answer. I can give you a theoretical answer, a theoretical insight to it that seems to hold some hope for an explanation.
Great.
And just my own conjecture, and I'd be glad to share it with you. But
thank you.
If you go back to the Einsteinian equation that was proposed around 1905, that, as we all know, E equals MC squared. Einstein was the first one to quantify that any mass, M, has an equivalent energy. And the equivalence means that matter can be converted to energy, as we now know in the atom bomb or the hydrogen bomb. And conversely, energy can be converted back to matter somehow. And we don't know all the mechanisms, but we know that there's a certain truth to the assertion, which is very startling. And I think the best way to consider the UFO mission is that since all matter is in somehow a form of energy, that the extraterrestrials have succeeded in converting matter into a more into a more concentrated energy field. And
that's what I was going to ask you. Energy field, do you believe in that? Explain an energy field for me.
Well, I think...
Well, he was working on the other question there first.
Oh, okay, let's go on the other question.
I think if you look at matter and do the mind experiment of getting down into an atom and getting closer and closer to the microcosm of the atom, you find that when you get to the kernel or you get to the electron outer orbit, you're dealing with an energy cloud, that the electron is an energy cloud. If you get through that to the nucleus, you're dealing with a concentrated electromagnetic force, which we call matter when we have a lot of it. But you see, the right angle turn phenomena is something that's easy to explain by vectoring energy. And I think that what we've got here is a way that extraterrestrials can transform the energy fields of...